In 1876, before setting off from America to Germany to study, William H. Welch, an ambitious young Bostonian, told his sister, quote, "If by absorbing German lore I can get a little start of a few thousand rivals and thereby reduce my competition a few hundred more or less, it is a good point to tally," close quote. Welch did go off to Germany for the coveted Ph.D., a degree which, at the time, had its actual existence in any practical sense only there, and in due course his ambition was satisfied. Welch became the first dean of Johns Hopkins Medical School, and later chief advisor to the Rockefeller Foundation on medical projects. Welch was one of thousands who found the German Ph.D. a blessing without parallel in late 19th century America. German Ph.D.s ruled the academic scene by then. Prussia itself was a curious place, not an ordinary country, unless you consider ordinary a land which, by 1776, required women to register each onset of their monthly menses with the police. North America had been interested in Prussian developments since long before the American Revolution, its social controls being a favorite subject of discussion among Ben Franklin's exclusive private discussion group, the Junta. When the phony Prussian Baron von Steuben directed bayonet drills for the colonial army, interest rose even higher. Prussia was a place to watch, an experimental state totally synthetic like our own, having been assembled out of lands conquered in the last crusade. For a full century, Prussia acted as our mirror, showing elite America what we might become with discipline. In 1839, 13 years before this first successful school compulsion law was passed in the United States, a perpetual critic of Boston Whig leadership charged that proposals to erect German-style teacher seminaries in this country were a thinly disguised attack on local and popular autonomy. The critic Brownson allowed that state regulation of teaching licenses was a necessary preliminary only if school were intended to serve as a psychological control mechanism for the state and as a screen for a controlled economy. If that was the game truly afoot, said Brownson, it should be reckoned an act of treason. Where the whole tendency of education is to create obedience, Brownson said, all teachers must be pliant tools of government. Such a system of education is not inconsistent with the theory of Prussian society, but the whole thing is inadmissible here. He further argued that, according to our theory, the people are wiser than the government. Here the people do not look to the government for light, for instruction, but the government looks to the people. The people give law to the government. Close quote. He concluded that to entrust government with the power of determining education which our children shall receive is entrusting our servant with the power of the master. The fundamental difference between the United States and Prussia has been overlooked by the Board of Education and its supporters. Close quote. The same notion of German influence on American institutions occurred recently to a historian from Georgetown, Dr. Carol Quigley. Quigley's analysis of elements in German character which were exported to us occurs in his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. Quigley traced what he called the German thirst for the coziness of a totalitarian way of life to the breakup of German tribes in the Great Migrations 1,500 years ago. When pagan Germany finally transferred its loyalty to the even better totalitarian system of Diocletian in post-Constantine Rome, that system was soon shattered too, a second tragic loss of security for the Germans. According to Quigley, they refused to accept this loss. For the next 1,000 years, Germans made every effort to reconstruct the universal system, from Charlemagne's Holy Roman Empire right up to the aftermath of Jena in 1806. During that 1,000-year interval, other nations of the West developed individual liberty as the ultimate center of society and its principal philosophical reality. But while Germany was dragged along in the same process, it was never convinced that individual sovereignty was the right way to organize society. Germans, said Quigley, wanted freedom from the need to make decisions. the negative freedom that comes from a universal totalitarian structure which gives security and meaning to life. The German is most at home in military, ecclesiastical, or educational organizations, ill at ease with equality, democracy, individualism, or freedom. This was the spirit that gave the West forced schooling in the early 19th century. So spare a little patience while I tell you about Prussia and Prussianized Germany, whose original mission was expressly religious, but in time became something else. During the 13th century, the Order of Teutonic Knights set about creating a new state of their own. After 50 turbulent years of combat, the Order successfully Christianized Prussia by efficient methods of exterminating the entire native population and replacing it with Germans. By 1281, the Order's hold on lands once owned by the heathen Slavs was secure. Then, something of vital importance to the future occurred. The system of administration selected to be set up over these territories was not one patterned on the customary European model of dispersed authority, but instead was built on the logic of Saracen centralized administration, an Asiatic form first described by crusaders returned from the Holy Land. For an example of these modes of administration in conflict, we have Herodotus' account of the Persian attempt to force the pass at Thermopylae. Persia, with its huge, bureaucratically subordinate army, arrayed against self-directed Leonidas and his 300 Spartans. This romantic image of personal initiative, however misleading, in conflict with a highly trained and specialized military bureaucracy, was passed down to 60 generations of citizens in Western lands as an inspiration and model. Now, Prussia had established an Asiatic beachhead on the northern fringe of Europe, one guided by a different inspiration. Between the 13th and 19th centuries, the Order of Teutonic Knights evolved by gradual stages into a highly efficient secular civil service. In 1525, Albert of Brandenburg declared Prussia a secular kingdom. By the 18th century, under Frederick the Great, Prussia had become a major European power in spite of its striking material disadvantages. From 1740 onwards, it was feared throughout Europe for its large, well-equipped, and deadly standing army, comprising a formulaic 1% of the population. After centuries of debate, the 1% formula became the lot of the United States military, too, a gift of Prussian strategist von Clausewitz to America. By 1740, the mature Prussian state structure was almost complete. During the reigns of Frederick I and his son Frederick II, Frederick the Great, the modern absolute state was fashioned there by means of immense sacrifices imposed on the citizenry to sustain permanent mobilization. The historian Thomas Macaulay wrote of Prussia during these years, "The king carried on warfare as no European power ever had. He governed his own kingdom as he would govern a besieged town, not caring to what extent private property was destroyed or civil life suspended. The coin was debased, civil functionaries unpaid, but as long as means for destroying life remained, Frederick was determined to fight to the last." Close quote. Goethe said Frederick, quote, "saw Prussia as a concept, the root cause of a process of abstraction consisting of norms, attitudes, and characteristics which acquired a life of their own. It was a unique process, supra-individual, an attitude depersonalized, motivated only by the individual's duty to the state." Close quote. Today, it's easy for us to recognize Frederick as a systems theorist of genius, one with a real country to practice upon. Under Frederick William II, Frederick the Great's nephew and successor, from the end of the 18th century on into the 19th, Prussian citizens were deprived of all rights and privileges. Every existence was comprehensively subordinated to the purposes of the state, and in exchange the state agreed to act as good father, giving food, work, and wages suited to the people's capacity, welfare for the poor and elderly, and universal schooling for children. The early 19th century saw Prussian state socialism arrive full-blown as the most dynamic force in world affairs, a powerful rival to industrial capitalism, with antagonisms sensed but not yet clearly identified. It was the moment of schooling, never to surrender its grip on the throat of society once achieved.